Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Oh, frig, I'm 50. If you're watching this on the day of release, it is my birthday, 12th of July. Hooray! you can come and see my show, Oh Frig, I'm 50, at the Edinburgh Fringe if you want. It's on at the Pleasance 1, 7:30 every night. I'm also doing some podcast there, Richard Herring's Edinburgh Fringe podcast, on Friday afternoons. I thought I'd book Saturday afternoons, which would have been clever, in quite a big theatre at the Newtown Theatre for the first 3 Fridays. So come along and see those if you're in Edinburgh. I will be touring Oh Frig, I'm 50, I'm sure, so come and see that. And also, of course, you can buy from gofasterstripe.com this emergency questions book full of 500 questions, such as what is your favourite papal name? And that will be a good one for intellectuals. Mine is Bony Face. But Urban's good, isn't it? There's all sorts of good ones. Do you think that maybe you're in your own version of the Truman Show? Everyone does, you fucking idiot. So if you buy that, it's £10 from gofasterstripe.com or from me at gigs. All that money will be plowed back into paying for filming this show. And it's going quite well, so we might actually be able to film this series just on the proceeds of selling this book. And we paid for the last series with the Kickstarter for that book. So hooray for us. Well done. Let's sit back and enjoy Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. My guest this week is Zoe Lyons. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has quite badly cut his finger today and needs a plaster. That's how bad it was. It's Richard Herring! Hello, Leicester Square. Hello, how are you doing? Hello, London. Lovely to be here. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was outside Books Etc. the other day, queuing up with some of the other people for the new Harry Potter release. We were all waiting outside for the next one to come out. It's not been announced, but we're just waiting in case. And there was a kid there dressed up as Hagrid, and he's about five. He called it Rehulstaber, so I don't know if that's going to catch on. I've cut my finger on a in a middle class accident where I was putting some glasses back into the cupboard and accidentally dislodged a champagne glass that fell out, and I tried to catch it and I caught it just as it broke, and it cut my finger and I properly bled. Whoa, it's nasty. It really hurt. But I'm going to soldier on and carry on with the show. It's difficult. I mean, fucking hell. I mean, thank God this show isn't topical, because it's just got to the point now where I'm afraid to go to sleep. Because every time I've woken up, every day I've woken up just to more appalling news. So, hello, people in the future. You may remember the problems we were having. They're probably nothing compared to what's going on with you. This one is going out on the 12th of July, on my birthday. I hope we're all still here. We may not be. There was one topical thing I saw in the... I think it was the Daily Express, was at the front page of the Daily Express, saying, in the light of all the terrorist atrocities that have been happening, that the SAS are pretending to be homeless people, so they're ready to jump into action. Should I mean, that is quite irresponsible of the Daily... I can't understand... Because if it's true, then that means terrorists are just going to go, well, if you see any homeless people, shoot them in the face first. And if it's not true, then loads of beggars are just going to get attacked, aren't they, for no reason. So I don't understand why the... I mean, you know, not that we have any reason to like the Daily Express. I went to... And my other piece of news this week is I went to... A new sourdough pizza chain. Was it called something? Franco Domenico? Yeah, Franco Manco. I hated it. I thought it was awful. I love pizza and I love sourdough. I just thought it was weak all round. My wife had anchovies and capers and olives. She's pregnant on her pizza, and it tasted like soap. And I thought, well, that's just because she's got the superpower of being pregnant and all your senses are heightened and you become... It's not a very useful superpower. But no, I tasted it. It was fucking awful. I was in Franco Domenico, and there's a very limited menu. It's basically got six pizzas, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And the waitress came over and I said, can I have the number six, the chorizo pizza? And she looked at me like she'd never heard of the concept of what I was talking about. To the point I went, oh, sorry, have I misread the menu? Do you not have the... She wrote it down, but she looked really confused. Okay. It's sort of weird that the waitress wouldn't know that was one of the six options. I mean, I didn't know if I was saying chorizo right. But, you know, I think you could still work out what I meant if it wasn't right. And then I said, can I have a lager? And she went, lager? And, yeah. Yeah, lager, you know. I just wonder whether, like, Sam Beckett had just leaked into it. That was what it was generally like. I mean, if I was given a job in a pizza restaurant, and I think I could have worked out. She got the orders, you know, they came. They tasted of soap, though, so, you know. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Look, we'll crack straight on. My guest this week, she's probably best known for being in the pilot episode on Sky TV of Street Cred Sudoku. I don't know how to say that. Sudoku. Will you please welcome Zoe Lyons, ladies and gentlemen? Zoe Lyons. Come in. Come in, sit down, make yourself at home. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Good.
I'm good.
Do you remember much about the pilot episode of Street Cred Sudoku?
I've completely forgotten that.
Have you?
It was.
It's on your website. It's not on your IMDb page.
It's
it was
on my
pilot.
Website?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, I've got to go.
You were
that.
Very proud of it, when it came up.
I've probably got one egg and spoon race in primary school as well. And there was a period of time when I didn't have many credits, so everything just went up there. Yeah, I'll take that off. Thanks, Richard. Yeah, okay. That's embarrassing. Yeah.
Good. I prefer Kakuru's. The Sudokus. But I couldn't make a game show based on either format, I have to say. I think it's probably weak. Yes, welcome to the show. Maybe I did know this about you, but you first rose to prominence as a contestant on the TV show Survivor.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little bit really embarrassing credit. 2001,
it was 2001.
I think
it won.
Yeah, 2001. It was... I was really bored. I was an out of... I was a waitress at the time,
yep.
Right, trying to get acting work, failing miserably because I wasn't a great actress, and I was
Did
really...
you, when people ordered stuff, did you know what they were talking about?
I did, yeah. I wasn't that bad. I was pretty good. But okay. I'm just not very dexterous. I have spilt quite a lot of jus and gravies down quite famous people's backs. Yeah, because I used to work in a restaurant where quite a lot of famous people came in, and like properly famous, not sort of made in Essex sort of famous, yeah. Like properly, like Lucian Freud famous.
Wow,
properly
okay.
famous.
That's good.
And... yeah, I served Helen Mirren once. She left her glasses on the table and had to run down the street after her shouting, Dame Mirren! Dame Mirren! Dame Mirren! And she completely ignored me. And in the end, she went, Oi, Helen! Respect, snuff! She was like, oh, thanks very much. So, yes, I was really bored one day at work and I saw an advert in a newspaper for a reality TV show, which was a new thing in that
time. Yeah,
it was what is this reality? This will never catch on. And it was for this show Survivor, and I had an American friend who'd seen it in the States, and she went, you should do that. I went, why? She went, you'd be good at that. I went, why would I be good at that? She went, just give it a go. So I sent off an application.
Yeah.
And then they sent something back, and there was another process, and I began to think, I think I could get this. I might be able to get this. And it was, they'd had Big Brother had already come out, so we were beginning to see the sort of types of people that they wanted on those sort of shows. So I hammed up the gay bit a bit, because I went, they'll need a gay. So that's genuinely what I thought. So I sort of went, I basically filled out my application, but a bit gay. And then I got an interview, and because it was a filmed interview, I did quite well. And then before I knew it, I was on a plane to Borneo, and I was like, shit, this was just a bit of a bet with myself. And I'd really lied about my level of fitness as well. And they were super fit, most of the people, properly sort of like extreme athletes and that sort of, I mean, there's a couple of people like me, but I'd really lied about it, and it was really hard work. I nearly died within the first 30 seconds of the show being filmed.
Right.
Because I'm really cack-handed. I've got no sense of balance. I'm all over the place. And we had to jump off this big boat onto a raft to paddle ashore to this island. I missed it completely. Went between the raft and the boat, and then the raft sort of, with the water sort of doing this, trapped me at my neck like that, between this boat and a raft. And I was like, oh, God, I'm going to die in the first 30 seconds of a reality TV show. It was a harrowing moment.
Yes.
I nearly died a couple of times doing it, actually.
Did you?
I got bitten by... where we were filming, it has the highest density of sea snakes in the world, and sea snakes are one of the most venomous reptiles on the planet. The good thing about them is they have very small fangs and they're quite far back in their mouth, so it is actually quite difficult for them to bite you.
Right, but you have to put your head in there.
Yeah. But there's tons of them. Tons of them. And at one point we were filming, bringing this fishing net in, right? And there was a cameraman right there in front of me, and this thing came out of the fishing net and went boom, boom, and bit me twice on the wrist and left two perfect bleeding fang marks. And I think I can safely say I properly shat myself with fear. Like, properly shat myself. And the whole facade went. And the cameraman's still filming this. And I went, put the fucking camera... We fucking go! Look at it! Fucking want me to eat my fucking... I went mentally... I was like, what? And... for about 15 minutes, I thought I'd been bitten by a sea snake.
Right.
And then they sent the diver back in. It turned out to be an eel. But there was a minute, though, where I thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. Which, it's weird what goes through your head. There's not a lot. Sort of white noise. And yeah.
Your life flashed before your eyes. There was just nothing there.
Not a lot.
I've done nothing.
No, not a lot there. And it was quite. They had two medics on the island, and obviously neither of them had encountered a snake bite or a potential snake bite before. And they were arguing with each other about what to do if you're bitten on your wrist by a snake. One was going, "Keep it above your heart." The other was going, "No, keep it below your heart." And they're going, "No, keep it above your heart." And the other was going, "No, below your heart." So then I thought, I'm effectively, if I have been bitten by a venomous animal, I'm now just pumping it around my body. I found out later,
your
heart.
Blow your heart.
If you're ever bitten by a sea snake in the Borneo area, or on the wrist, keep it below your heart.
Did you win Survivor?
No, I didn't do badly, though, because I was really, really shit at most things. And I managed to hang on for quite a long time. So they started off with 16, and I got down to the last six.
Okay, that's not bad.
And there was £1 million. Yes, I know, it's £1 million. Oh, yeah. I started, yeah.
Which, did you get anything for coming sixth?
I got wood termites buried in my backside. Genuinely true. Yeah, I got wood termites, but it was Borneo. It's full of...
That wasn't the prize, right?
No.
I quite like that. The first prize is £1 million.
Second prize, wood termites buried in your backside that you have to get out by rubbing petrol into your arse.
Do you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Great diet, though. I looked amazing for a few months. Really amazing.
I think maybe I should go and survive it. Are they still doing it?
No. Not here.
No.
It's quite funny. It didn't really do well in this country because we prefer watching people slag each other off in a house.
Yeah.
And the Americans and the Australians prefer seeing people do stuff that's got a bit of endeavour to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I like the Channel 4. Is it called Shipwrecked? Was it like Shipwrecked?
Yeah.
Remember that one?
Where was that? Yeah.
Well, it's mainly because it was like young people in bikinis stranded on an island.
You've been very disappointed in my bikini look. After a month. It's, because, it gets quite wild. You know, I looked like I'd been on a desert island for a month. There was fur everywhere, full beard, wood termites buried in my arsehole. It really wasn't Love Island.
There's a sitcom in that, though, isn't it? A woman with wood termites in her anus as she gets around. good. So you moved around a lot. You were born in Wales, but you grew up in
Ireland.
Ireland and Glasgow, you were
Ireland,
university.
Ireland and then Surrey and then Glasgow.
What was the reason for the moves? I couldn't work that out.
Well, my dad's Irish, my mum's English, and he was working in Wales when I was born, and then he took another job back in Ireland, so I went to school in Ireland. I was got the old Irish passport, which I'm most grateful for, post-Brexit. I was brought up in Ireland, taught by nuns. This is what you get. And we moved back to England when I was about 9 years old. We moved to Surrey, and then from Surrey, then my mum and dad split up, and my stepfather's Scottish, so he got transferred back to Glasgow. So I ended up in Glasgow.
Right, it's a little tour of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, my accent's been all over the place because now I sound like I'm from the north, but I'm not. But it's just sort of gravitated somewhere central. It's like, oh, fuck this, we can't keep up with you. Where are we going? Because I had a really strong Irish accent until I was about nine. And then it became Surrey and then a bit of Glasgow. And now it's just kind of gone, oh, fuck it. But it's quite handy for comedy because I can northern it up a bit or southern it up a bit, depending on where I am.
Yes.
And I shamelessly use it to ingratiate myself on crowds around the country. Yeah, I really do. First time I played Manchester Comedy Store, I was like, oh, yeah, you're right, lovely. Oh, icky thump. Because you know what it's like.
That's what I'm very much like. Yeah. I can do that. I think you were talking to Stuart Goldsmith about your childhood, and you're quite. I think because you've just done a show called Misfit. Yeah. That's finished now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just finished.
But that was about. Was the show partly about your childhood?
About
being a bit of a misfit
and sort of moving. Growing up in different places and being, a gay kid at school, with alopecia. So
yeah,
a balding homo. Yeah, I know. A homo with a comb over. That's.
Because you seem like, I've only known you, more recently. I've probably met you in about 2004, 2005 on the circuit, I guess. And you've always seemed kind of incredibly cool to me.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Really?
You've got like tattoos, you live in Brighton.
God. In Brighton, you've got to get one of those to live in Brighton. If you don't have a skateboard or a tattoo, you can't come in.
You're not allowed.
No, and we've become very strict about this now that we've got the Republic of Brighton and Hove, which has got, we are the only Labour and Green MPs on the south coast. So, yeah, there's a checking system as you come in now. You've either got to have a scooter, a skateboard or a tattoo.
Right.
Yeah. And that's that, yeah.
But you didn't consider yourself cool at school? You
oh, were God, no, God,
you
no.
Said you were called the Freak.
Called the Freak. That was my nickname.
That's awful.
Was school, the Freak. But I was a bit weird. I was a bit weird, yeah.
Would that be in Glasgow?
That was in Glasgow, yeah.
And so you were kind of English in Glasgow.
I had an English accent by that point and then moved to Glasgow. I know,
Did not make it easy on yourself.
No.
And so how did the comedy... So you were trying to be an actor, first of all, when you went to the poor school?
Yeah, I went to university. Well, after school, I went to university. And at university, I just spent loads of time doing plays and or trying to do. Well, yeah, I tried to do plays. I was usually the sort of club-footed maid. That was the role I was given.
Right.
And I spent a lot of time making props for plays, wanting to be in the plays. And then somebody came, I got the lead role in a Brian Friel play, Dancing at Lunasa, which was amazing. I played Maggie, one of the sisters in that.
Oh, cool.
And that was amazing. So then I decided I wanted to go to drama school after uni and did that for a couple of years. And then, you know, it's really hard. It's really hard getting work as an actor.
Yeah.
And I did a bit of fringy stuff. And then I just started watching more and more stand-up and I thought, you can actually do that for yourself. You're not waiting for somebody else to give you permission to do that.
Yeah,
somebody's
yeah.
not going to go, your face in that role, off you pop. So I started to watch more and more open mic stand-up. And, you know, some of it was good and some of it was so bad. I just thought, I could be that bad. I could, if that's how low the bar, I can definitely hit that low bar. And I just went, watched loads of stuff, made notes to myself what to do, what not to do.
Yeah.
And I had a list like, don't look at your watch, that looks really unprofessional. I totally do that all the time now. I'm like, fuck, are we still going? Oh, Christ, aren't we? I booked myself in to do a 5-minute spot at the King's Head in Crouch End.
Oh, yeah.
And went along and did it. And yeah. that was it. That was literally it. Then I had another gig the next week and another gig next week, and I just kept doing it.
And you won an award quite... You won the Funny Women, must have been quite early. Was that quite
yeah,
early?
Yeah, a few months in.
Yeah.
yeah.
So it was...
With really shit material. But I had the confidence of something. You know when you watch a drunk crossing the road and they don't care? They don't care. They're like... in between lorries, I'm like... Whoa! That was me doing my first gigs like that. There was absolutely no substance to it. The material was horrific. But I had that blind confidence, that blind or drunk confidence. Of,
yeah.
I wasn't drunk. I don't drink on stage because I know... I made that decision very early on because I thought if that becomes a habit, it's going to get very expensive. So
it's difficult though, isn't it? Because you are like that as a comedian. You are working in pubs basically all
the
time.
Yeah, all the time.
And so you know, or bars, and people give you drinks after the. I mean, it's all right if it's after the show, I guess.
After the show,
people are people are encouraging you to drink. And
you can't do it.
No,
yeah, see, I know some comics can mix the booze and the humour, but I can't. It just all goes.
Yeah.
The timing goes. Everything goes. I did it once. I did that thing where we went out... Because doing this job, sometimes... it's easy to forget sometimes it is a job, isn't it?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
You know? And it was a really lovely afternoon in Brighton. And the wife and I went for a stroll. And we ended up having a lunch by the seaside. And we said, would you like a glass of wine? I went, well, I'm working late. I really shouldn't have a glass of wine. Come on, a little glass of wine. And we said, two glasses of... Have a couple of glasses of... And I said, well, if we're getting glasses, we might as well get a bottle. It's easy to get a couple of glasses. But even if the larger glasses, you're leaving essentially one glass of wine on its own in the bottle. And that's going to be lonely. So just for the wine's sake, we should really just consume it all at once. And one thing left to another, and it was a beautifully sunny afternoon. Three bottles of wine later, I was like, I've got to go and do a gig, and it was awful. I think I got away with it, but inside I was like, I will never ever do this again.
I think it just throws you off. I mean, it's like if you're having a lovely gig, it can be okay, but if the minute anything goes wrong, you have to deal with anything.
You have to think outside of what you've really got set in your head.
Well, because the beauty is usually you're the sober person in the room and everyone else is pretty drunk.
Yeah.
So if anyone chips in, you're at a massive advantage over them.
I don't know what I'd have done, starting a fight or something.
Yeah,
you know, come on then, take it outside. I'll fucking have you. I'll have you. Yeah.
But Jason Cook used to do, the Frog and Bucket used to do a late night gig where he would get, you would have to be hammered to go on. I can't remember what they called it.
Oh,
but
really?
So I did my, I went up there one year, did my show, and then they had a late night show after my show.
Yeah.
In which they plied me with tequila shots and beer.
And then made you do your...
And then I did, you know, but it was so, I mean, I was really properly,
pissed.
Fully pissed.
Yeah.
And it was quite exciting because you'd just start coming up with really strange stuff and people shouting stuff, and then you were ad-libbing stuff. I started ad-libbing stuff about the Bible, and it was all quite factually correct as well. It was I can't remember what it was because I was drunk, so I don't remember it the next day. But it was quite impressive. But then I was also just there were some girls in the front who were being a bit chippy, but I was just... incredibly inappropriately rude to them, like even by my own standards, just too rude about their physical appearance.
in a way that you only got away with because they knew. And they were playing, you know, there was tequila was appearing on the stage as you were going, so it was, everyone knew what the score was.
But that's all right as long as everybody knows what the score is. There's so many of those gigs now up in Edinburgh that's got a sort of theme to them, haven't they? A sort of slight tilt on what's going on. It's like you come out, you do your set, but you don't quite do your set. You rap your set, or you rap somebody else's set. And you're like, do I have to?
It's a lot. Oh, the thing I remember from the early days of when I saw you, which I did get with you a few times early on, was you did a very good impression of Sherry Blair. That was, which must be now. You probably don't do that anymore. I guess
it's still there.
Is it still there?
That won't come across on the podcast.
Yeah, well, still, some of it, the film people.
It is. I've got a funny face. It's a sort of. I used to do that thing when I first started, going, hello, what you think I look like? You know what you do?
Yeah.
But mine was a cross between Mr. Bean and Myra Hindley, and it used to get quite a big laugh. And if you do look, they very much feature in my features.
That's so classy, though.
It's classy.
That's a classy version of that
joke.
I used to
have a stupid joke. You know, I'm very good at children's parties. I'm fond but firm.
Takes a lot to shock the Less Square Theatre podcast audience.
I think I've managed it.
But you've done it. It's very early on, that's good. But we'll push them further, don't you worry. I'll move to an emergency question because you know we're in emergency now. I marked some out and now I can't find them. Oh, here we go. This is the one that I really want to ask you. This is the first one I've come across. If you had to be anally violated by a popular chocolate bar, if you had to.
Yeah.
Which chocolate bar would you choose to be inserted in your anus?
Well, I don't think I'd be shy if I was going for it, so it would have to be the full four-finger Twix. I mean, if you're going to do it, do it. Don't go for a flake. Nobody will enjoy that. It doesn't have the consistency to do the job properly. No. I'd go for the full, or even a chunky.
Yeah.
Chunky Kit Kat.
The next question is, after you have been anally violated by the chocolate bar, who would you like to then eat the chocolate bar, not knowing where it had been, whilst you secretly watched them?
Well, that's a double-edged sword question, isn't it? Because you're going to have to get rather intimate with somebody you might not like. Well, you wouldn't like them. Yeah, so... But it's your asshole. Yeah. So, at the moment, probably somebody like Michael Gove. Because he looks like he's already done that. Anyway, he's got that sort of I've just come away from anally munching some chocolate. He's got that look. Yeah. He's got a face that looks like he'd be well adapted to that.
He's got a face that looks like he's eaten a lot of chocolate bars. Yeah, definitely. Although, you know, I think he would like it. I can't believe he's back.
I know. Gove. God, it's incredible.
I had a chance to kill him.
Did you?
Well, I've had a couple of chances to kill him, but I saw him. He was just walking around the Westfield before Brexit, on his own with his kids, and I had a bottle of beer, and you know I could have smashed it, and there was no security detail.
No,
I can't work out if it'd been worth being in prison for 30 years.
I mean, spared
this from that.
I don't know. I mean, what is he now? Environment Secretary or something?
Yeah, he's Environment Secretary. Well, as we record, he's the Environment Secretary. Could have happened by the 12th of July when this goes out.
The 12th of July. God, is that some big date in the DUP calendar as well?
It is.
Like, so we'll be marching, there'll be little whistles, it'll be lovely.
I like things. So my favourite colour's orange, and I love bowler hats and marching, so... I like deliberately marching through an area where people don't like me. That's what I like. And where that is offensive to them. So, you know, it's perfect for me.
They're so homophobic, the DUP. But then I wonder what they think about oranges aren't the only fruit. That was really conflicting. They'd be like, no, they're not. Yes, they're. No, they're. Yes, they're. Oh, I don't know how I feel about this. I'm going to have to anally protrude something up four fingers of chocolate. There you go. Yeah, it's a strange old world, isn't it? It's a strange old world.
It's very, very strange at the moment. Which, I'll ask you another emergency question. What swear word would you like repeatedly shouted by a drunk man at your funeral?
Ooh.
The drunk man is turning up regardless and is going to shout something, so you might as well choose.
I quite like fat knuckle.
Yeah.
Fat knuckle. My mum uses it every now and again. Oh, just a complete fuck knuckle. And it's funny when a woman in her 70s says it. It really is. It's got, and it's quite a meaty swear word, isn't it? It's fuck knuckle. So yes, fuck knuckle.
Good, yeah.
Fuck knuckle. And I think it's one of those words, if you said it over and over again, it would lose any sort of meaning, and then it become quite sort of rhythmic and almost sort of yogic. Fuck knuckle, fuck knuckle.
Almost like a hymn of some kind to
sort
celebrate
of
your life.
A meditative state. Yeah.
Good. You've married a Dutch woman, according to Wikipedia. That's what it says. Wikipedia says she married a Dutch woman.
Jesus Christ.
Do you think Dutch people should be allowed to get married? I don't mind them getting together, but yeah. I just don't know whether they should be recognised.
The Dutch Union.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they should marry out of Holland.
Yes.
I don't agree with same nationality marriages for Dutch people. I think that's abhorrent and slightly disgusting.
Okay.
And the thing is with Dutch people, they've got quite a concentrated character to them. They're very... they're really blunt and to the point, Dutch people. So I think that needs to be diluted with maybe marrying somebody from perhaps Southern Europe or going... or a Brit. But two of them together, wow. Yeah, too much. You know, you ask a Dutch person what they're thinking, they will tell you, and it's quite harsh. It is quite harsh. You've put on weight. I don't like your hair. Why are you fat? Something smells funny. You're like, oh my God! You know, it's like being with a child at times.
Well, my wife is. She's a quarter Norwegian or something. My
wife. Okay.
Or something.
Yeah.
I didn't really bother. I've asked her stuff, but you know, it's boring trying to remember, isn't it? But she's very blunt. I cooked a roast dinner for roast lunch for all my. It was Father's Day,
but I got to cook the dinner.
I did all the cooking because it's sort of a reverse world, isn't it? What I like when I do a roast is to roast garlic. I really like roast garlic, but no one else likes it. So at lunchtime, I ate an entire, probably two bulbs of roast garlic.
Wow.
Now, when I did a gig and it was quite sweaty, and then I came back to bed and my wife went, have you been like sprayed with something on the tube?
Oh, God.
I had to go and have a shower. And she was really, because she's pregnant, so like all smells are heightened, so it's even worse for her. But I've been sweating garlic, so if I'm still sweating garlic, I apologise.
I'm not getting it off you now.
It was so bad, she thought there'd been an industrial accident of some kind, or you know, some kind of chemical attack on the tube. So she's quite blunt as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've really had to train my wife
and
how not to get punched in public. I'd say, yeah, it's fascinating. But then I've learned from her because, you know, as Brits, you know, I'm really sort of overly apologetic. And after you. And it dawned on me the other day, if I was ever in any sort of life threatening situation, you know, like a boat going down or something like that, you'd want to be with my wife because not only would you get on that lifeboat, there'd just be the two of you there. Like, you should be there going, fuck off, our lifeboats, get off, our lifeboats, get off. I mean, she's forthright. I quite like that.
Yeah, it's good.
It's what I look for in a lady. That and the broad shoulders.
And you've been together, have you been together 16, 20, 17,
19 years.
19 years, yeah.
Wow. 19 years, yeah.
God.
It's a long time, isn't
it? It is. I've done like 9 with my wife.
9?
Yeah, that's too long.
Yeah, you hit a sort of point around about 10, and then you're like, we may as well just carry on now.
I mean, as
so many things in your name. I wouldn't know where the electricity bills are. It becomes more of an administration horror than anything else. You know, I don't know where, who pays the water bills or what's going on. So to extract yourself from that level of admin.
It's interesting. I'm only staying in the relationships because I'm almost certain to die first.
Yeah.
My wife doesn't appreciate how much stuff I do.
Yeah.
And once I'm dead, she'll find out how much stuff
really?
I do. And then she'll appreciate me. So I'm staying. She just thinks I don't do anything. But when she's dead, she's going to find out how much stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a duck floating on the water and the legs are going underneath. It's an amazing amount I contribute to that.
So much low-level admin going on.
Amazing stuff I do.
Yeah.
She's not going to be able to cope without me, and that delights me.
Yeah.
So I'm staying in the relationship. I'm definitely going to die first, so...
Is she much younger than you?
She's like 13 years younger than me.
See, my wife is 14 years older than me.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so she's a good 36 now. And, yeah, so she's older than me. It's, but it does make you think differently. You think, well, she's maybe healthier than me. I don't know, but, you know. You've got to, I found myself saying, well, we've got to do this while you're still alive, love, you know. Like booking holidays. I'm like, well, why not? Because we don't really know how long. You know, there's only an imagined future.
Yeah. We've just bought a puppy because we're moving to the countryside because I'm 50.
Yeah.
And it's the first pet I've had that I thought, there's actually a good chance you will outlive me. Yeah.
Yeah. What sort of puppy?
It's a half a German Shepherd, half a Husky.
Oh, that's robust. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that will probably...
That'll last 5 years.
Yeah.
And outlive you, Richard, yeah.
You can't worry about
this. Yes, that's exciting. You used to work in a jam factory. I would like to know all about that.
That sounds like such a horrific euphemism, doesn't it? We didn't actually make jam in the factory.
What?
We packed jam, I know. We packed jam. In Glasgow, in the summer holidays, I worked in a packing factory that packed jam. And it was brilliant, actually, because it was all women who worked there, and it was sort of... Think, you know the Tetley Tea boys with the hats and the coats?
Yeah.
Imagine that, but Glaswegian women. That's cool. They all had the little coats on, the nets on the head, and just the funniest, brilliant people.
Yeah.
Just, you know, basically stood 8 hours a day packing jams.
How do you pack jam? Is there a machine that you have to operate, or do you just ladle
it? No, because we were putting together things like hampers and that sort of thing.
Oh, okay, so
it wasn't just jam.
You weren't even putting the jam in the jars.
No,
the jarred jam would turn up and you would put it in stuff.
And then
that is not a job.
Also worked. Did that? A lot of fudge packing.
Fudge packing.
Because they sold fudge as well, and you'd have to pack that into boxes, so I'd spend a whole day fudge packing. I ate a lot of fudge. Yeah, it was a great job. I was 16.
Yeah.
I was 16. I was getting like 200 quid a week, which is pretty good. You know? Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I miss camaraderie of working with other people, because this is such an isolating, lonely job at times.
It can be. I think especially when you start doing your own tours and you're off on your own.
Oh, God. You're on your own, Because when I tour, I mean, it's so... I don't have support, and very rarely do I have support, and there's certainly no tour manager or any of that thing, so you're on your own the whole day. So sometimes the first proper conversation you've had is on stage.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's hot, isn't it? How are the kids? So, yeah, I miss the camaraderie of workplace.
Yeah.
Mm. Maybe I'll go back.
Go back
to
jam.
There's a very strong possibility that I will go back to jam packing. I wouldn't have a problem with that.
No.
I've always said, when I've had enough of this, I'll just stop. I will not Ken Dodd the shit out of this.
Right.
There is no way. There is no way I'll be doing this at 80. Absolutely no way. There'll be one day where I go, that's the last gig I'll ever do, and then I'll stop and I'll go back to packing jam. And it'll all be like a dream.
See, that's interesting. I think most comics would feel they wanted to carry on as long as they could carry on. What's your cut-off point?
There's a very, very thin line between showbiz and tragedy.
There is.
Isn't there?
Yeah.
And, you know, I skate it. I'm teetering on it most of the time, you know, when I'm turning up to do my short tour show. They go, well, make it look busy, don't worry. We've put the tables out so that the tables take up quite a lot of space. So you're constantly teetering on that sort of thin line between tragedy and showbiz. And I think there will come a tipping point where one day I'll go, No. So when you see people who've been working on cruise ships for a long time, and just that sadness in their leathery faces.
Can't it? Ken Dodd isn't maybe not a great example, because he still packs people into
He packs them in, but he keeps them there for days.
He does, yeah.
I mean, they don't all make it out, because... They're quite old, a lot of his audience, you know, so you're not all going to make it to the end of the four-hour show. But I admire people like that, but It's just not in me.
Yeah.
It's just not in me.
I think it's interesting. I can't remember which comic it was, but it was a comic from like the generation before mine. He was talking about that once you get into your 50s and 60s and you're doing all the driving around. Yeah. And you're still playing to 20 or 30 people.
Yeah.
And I think they had a cut, and they nearly had a car crash or something. And they just thought, this isn't
worth
doing this, you know. Yeah. And they were quite a big name. I can't remember who it was, but you know, they didn't. There is a tragedy, I suppose, if you just keep pushing it and you're not accepting it.
But life's short as well, and I think you should be able to do other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, try other stuff as well. Who knows? There could be like, maybe, I don't know, you know. Maybe I want to be an accountant. I don't know. I say this because I had a bit of an epiphany the other day, because for all of my life I've ordered lattes. And a couple of weeks ago I thought, break the mould, life's short. And I ordered a flat white. And you know what? I really, really like flat whites. Yeah. And I'd never knew I liked flat whites. And I denied myself flat whites for all of that time. 25 years I've been drinking lattes, and it turns out I actually prefer a flat white. And I think life's like that. You think, well, maybe there's a husband and kids out there for me somewhere. Maybe. If I can be that wrong about a mixture of milk and coffee, maybe I can be really wrong about a lot of other really important stuff.
Yeah.
You just don't know. Yeah. I'd like to be a forest ranger.
Would you?
Yep. I really would.
Out of all the rangers?
A forest ranger.
Yeah, it has to be a forest ranger.
Forest ranger, not the Lone Ranger. Again, isolated.
I think a forest ranger is probably pretty isolated.
No, you go back to the headquarters
to the
and have
ranger
a cup of
station.
Tea. The ranger station.
With all the other rangers.
Yeah, and talk about stuff. And you get a nice big pair of utility shorts with possible big pockets of... on the side, I'd like that. And then the use of the Forest Ranger Range Rover, the sort of Land Rover Discovery that's now not being made anymore, but they'll still keep going for ages, and it's such a reliable 4x4. Fix fences.
Yeah.
Spot deer. That'd be lovely. That'd be really nice.
Yeah.
I'd really like that.
Get picnic baskets off of bears and give them back to people. That sort of thing. Would it be in the whereabouts would the forest be that you're ranging?
There's bears involved now. Yeah. We've had to go abroad. So this ambition has risen somewhat. Abroad would be good.
Yeah.
I'm not. My brother lives in Alaska.
And, oh, my God.
Yeah, which is proper abroad.
Yeah.
And I was there. I was there in December, and it's an amazing place. I mean, it's properly. It's properly Republican. It's properly. It's the place. Yeah. It's the sort of place where even the bears carry arms.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they've misread the Constitution. but it's properly. You can drive for days and not see anybody. You drive in Alaska and you can see nothing for hours and hours and hours. And then you'll come across this like wild saloon bar in the middle of nowhere, and they'll have a sign outside that says "Girls, girls, girls." And you just think, where are they? Come from? Where have the girls come from? They haven't passed a car for 3 hours. What are they? Just beavers with bigger nipples? I don't know. But I think I'd be quite happy living out there, listening to John Denver CDs and kicking about in the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You travel a lot as a comedian now, and you're one of those comedians who does that. So you've been to the Australian circuit.
Yeah.
You do quite a lot. There's quite a lot of gigs around the world that you can do if you follow that circuit.
Yeah, I've just come back from New Zealand.
Yeah.
That was nice. I won't go again. It's too far. It's too far.
I've never been to New Zealand. Australia a few times. I would quite like to go back, but it is too far.
It's a long way.
I need more people to like me in Australia.
Yeah, it's a long
way. I mean, some people do like me in Australia, but more probably than they did 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
You do find yourself sort of turning up in New Zealand going, why have I come all this way? I could have got this smaller crowd in Cumbria. Travel for 26 hours in economy.
It's a long way away.
It's a very long way away.
And then very nice. And I enjoyed being out there. But I think it's, you know, again, I think your life changes as well, doesn't it? I mean, now it just... Before my kids get to too old, you know, I have to go to school, I guess is probably the time to do it. So you could travel out as a family and...
Yeah.
But yeah, I just sort of feel like I'll go to Australia for 6 weeks to earn no money and then come back and go, oh, shit, we have to move out of the house now and give it back to the bank.
I've done some fun things with Australia, though. I did the Melbourne Comedy Roadshow.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask about
that. So that's where they drive you all around. You do all the, various states. And I did Western Australia on one of the runs. And it was brilliant because we were performing in towns where we, as the comedians, were the only sort of people not working in the mine. We were the only non-miners because there's huge mineral mines out in Western Australia. And there's sod all else there. And I'm turning up going, oh, God, they're going to hate me. They're going to really hate me. You know, this is a long way to come to die on your ass. That's the other thing you're thinking, isn't it? Yeah, I've travelled for 36 hours just to be shouted at and die on my ass. And they were so sweet and so welcoming. They were brilliant. Yeah. They were absolutely brilliant. I loved it. But, yeah, you're performing in some quite strange places.
Yeah. And Australia, as you get into the middle, becomes kind of weird and unsettling.
The politics in Australia is quite... It's like the States. You stay around. If you can see the sea, you're going to have a decent conversation with somebody. If you can't see the sea, strap in, because 3 seconds into the conversation, it's going to go places you didn't want it to go. You know, because driving around Australia, you see all a land full of immigrants, just literally third generation immigrants, you know, apart from the Arab originals, it's third generation immigrants going, we don't want immigrants here! You know, and you're like, you're all immigrants. You're Greek. You are Greek. And see those bumper stickers that you see in Australia, you know, back off, we're full. And you go, you know, I've had a look, there's loads of space. There is literally tons of space. You've got a lot of space. So,
Well, we might talk about that more with Brendan and Craig, who will be on in a few weeks. I think that might be something we'll be talking about. But cool. You mentioned somewhere in an interview about the being on the Alan Titchmarsh show, and there wasn't very many much details about it, but we want to talk about tattoos on the Alan Titchmarsh show.
God. You know sometimes your agent phones you up and goes, will you do this? Yeah. It's blah, 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 pounds. And you go, I need blah, 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 pounds. But you haven't really listened to the first bit of the sentence. All you've heard is blah, 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 pounds. You're like, no, you need blah, 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 pounds. And I got to go on the Alan Titchmarsh show, which is recorded in front of a live studio audience, and I use that word so loosely. So loosely. And they were doing tattoos. They were doing a thing about etiquette and tattoos, and they had this prat on with a floppy hair and a blazer, who is an etiquette expert, and just a complete and utter wanker. The sort of person you'd never tire of slapping. It just so stuck up. And he was only about 22, 23, you know what I mean? And just like that, I think tattoos makes a human look like a human toilet wall. I was just sat there going, I bet you've seen a lot of toilet walls. And you had your head flushed down the toilet when you were a school kid. So it was really, really awkward, really... It didn't go anywhere. We were just talking about tattoos. It was Alan Titchmarsh show. I was like, why didn't he blah, 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 pounds this much? I've been humiliated in front of a half-dead audience. It's going to be... And as I left the stage, it was just this pointless thing where you just go, oh, God. Sometimes you do things on telly that you just... It's like... It's so shameful. You just feel like you've crapped yourself in front of a room full of people. You're like, don't look at me. I've soiled myself. And... as I left the stage, the next act on was a disabled dog. He had bat wheels for legs. And they loved him. They fucking loved him. And they gave me something. I thought, I've been upstaged by a disabled dog on wheels for blah, blah, blah pounds. And I just... it was horrible. It was a really horrible experience.
He doesn't do that show anymore. It was an odd choice, Alan Titchmarsh.
Alan Titchmarsh.
He was a gardener, wasn't he?
He's a gardener and a novelist.
Yeah.
And just a bit judgy. And you could tell he was siding with the bloke who didn't like tattoos. And I can't even remember what I said at one point. I can't... It was that horror of realising you're inside something. Like, you're in a really bad thing, but you're being filmed doing it and you can't get out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's that look in your face. Good.
But in a way, the amazing thing about TV now is it's so disposable that most things, you know... I've done some embarrassing things that I don't think anyone has seen.
Yeah.
I got blah, blah, blah pounds for them as well. Yeah, yeah. And I think, oh, good, that was all right, actually. I'm happy. Has anyone seen it yet? Best Man Speech? Did anyone ever see me in that show? Oh, one person, sorry.
What was that show?
It was good, wasn't it?
You found the one Dutch person. No, it was very poor.
It was good. It was good pay for 3 days' work. Is all we can say. About it. I thought it was quite a good idea for
what
a show.
Was the show.
It was good, but it was on ITV3 or something. Or, like at the time when that was, new. And they pitched it saying the idea is, you know, you take someone who's going to be a best man at a wedding and you teach them how to do a good speech.
Right.
As a comedian, I thought that could be quite an interesting show, you know, because that's people are always emailing. I don't know if you get that, but people always email me saying, "What I've got, I've done what to do. I've got one joke that will work. Actually, probably only in a heterosexual marriage. It might work in both. This is the joke I always send. So don't email me. This is the joke. You say, I hope any children that come from this reunion will have the looks of their mother and the brains of their mother. That's your joke. That's the joke. That's guaranteed.
It's a good
fantastic
joke.
Yeah. For a wedding. So I thought it'd be a bit like that, but it was just like doing loads of fucking stupid stunts. Like I had to stand on a balcony while a guy pretended he'd broken both his arms and tried to get passers-by to help him use his mobile phone.
Why were you on a balcony?
To help him with his best man speech. Oh, well, I was watching it so that he didn't know. I think I could talk to him give him.
Yeah.
No. Do something else. ask them to help you with the phone.
Oh God.
Yeah, that's it. And he was a nice. They were nice. I think I did. Maybe it was just one guy. I can't remember now. But the guy was a nice guy that I remember. Or two guys. But it was just. It was a shame because they just sort of turned it into sort of stupid something. And on the first day, Dave Gorman was also nearly going to do it. And he was umming and ahhing, saying, I'm not sure, is it going to be any good? On the first day, the first thing we did was all right. And I rang him and said, oh, it's all right, Dave. I think it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So he signed up to do it as well on that. And then, like, this afternoon, I went, oh, no, it's... No, and it was too late. He was already doing it. So he never quite forgave me for that, I don't think. But no one ever saw it. That woman saw it. And she liked it, really. She's just saying she didn't like it now. It was pretty bad, wasn't it? We had to go to an old folks' home to do jokes written in an old folks' home.
Oh, God.
And none of the things that would help you. What you want is a comedian to sit down and go, here's what you do.
Yeah.
Think about it. Because it's actually quite easy doing a best man speech or like any of those speeches, I think. You just have to tell a few. I've seen some terrible wedding speeches, right?
Yeah.
From people who don't seem to know their family members or their friends very well.
Or just go way too inappropriate too early on.
Or just print something off the internet and, you know, think, I'll just read a load of jokes off the internet. And that's not the way. We just tell two stories about the person that are a little
brothel
bit
risky. Related.
Yeah. They're a little bit funny. Them doing something a bit embarrassing or them doing something, you know. Yeah. And it's quite easy. And then say something nice.
Yeah, and keep it short.
And keep it short and fuck off.
Yeah, 5 minutes max.
Yeah,
less is more.
Though, having said that, when I did I didn't prepare for my wedding speech.
You didn't? You probably podcasted it though, didn't you? Some money to be made out of this, surely.
I was quite drunk and I hadn't really. I kind of had a couple of ideas, but I hadn't done enough.
Yeah.
Luckily. At my wedding, they had like table arrangements with like little different things, and so they had some mints and they had some lip balm, and just before I did which is quite weird, but just before I did my speech, my mum leant over and said, "Your dad's just eaten the lip balm. He thought that it was cheese, so he'd spread it on a biscuit." I mean, I go.
Who's bought cheese?
Why is it in a tiny little pot?
This is expensive camembert.
And then, didn't you realise when you were eating it that it wasn't cheese?
Minty cheese.
So I just laughed at my dad for 3 minutes.
That's enough, isn't it? That's enough.
It was a week. I was weak, so I wasn't the person to ask. Anyway, let's move on. You studied psychology at York University.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you do me now?
No. I really didn't attend an awful lot of lectures. Yeah. I was interested. I went to York because it had a good psychology course and it also had a really pretty prospectus.
Yeah.
York
was one of my choices. I wanted to. I was born near York. So
were you?
Yeah. So kind of. But then we moved away. So I was really keen to go. But I really love York.
Yeah. Because I was still at school in Glasgow, and I was quite keen to move quite far away.
Yeah.
So I ended up in York. It wasn't. Yeah. It was a bit square, York Uni.
Was it? Yeah.
It was a bit square. Yeah. I wish I'd gone to Manchester or Leeds, something like that. I used to go through to Manchester and Leeds for music gigs.
Yes.
But I did psychology because I thought I wanted to do that. And then I sort of, as you learn it, you go, oh, this is what it's about, is it? Blindfold a pigeon. Get it to walk around a maze. No. But as I get older and doing it, I'm fascinated by human behaviour. I mean, that's that aspect of it I really like. Yeah. I love watching people misunderstand each other. I love how... You know when you see those little things happening and you just go, oh, that'll lead to an argument. she thought he said that. Oh, dear God, here we go. And then, there it is, lovely. So I'm quite interested in...
Yeah,
human behaviour.
By the time I got to university, I was, you know, I'd been quite a swot, but I sort of rebelled and didn't want to do any studying, and didn't do any. I really studied nothing at all, and I kind of, if it was, I'd quite like to go back now.
I would.
You should defer it till you're 50 and then go back and learn some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't ready to go. No. I had other questions in my mind about who I was and where I wanted to be. I mean, I wasn't terribly academic, and. You know, I got distracted by everything, you know. I joined the Pothole Society. I did everything. I was a member of the Octopush Sports Club, which is underwater hockey.
All right.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Sounds like York was pretty cool to me.
Underwater hockey, that's what I've spent most of my time playing, which is where you have fins and a mask and a snorkel, and you have this little... bat thing, and you play with an ice hockey puck on the bottom of a pool, and it's quite aggressive. There's quite a few bloody noses, but it wasn't studying. what else did I do?
Must be quite hard to referee that.
It's quite difficult to referee. Yeah, you lose a few referees. They don't bring a snorkel there. It's a ridiculous, stupid sport, and it's clearly not a spectator sport. I don't know whether this people still play it, but I spent most of my time at university just fanning around.
You did it in an aquarium, in one of those things where people can walk underneath.
Oh, that'd be quite good, wouldn't
then you
it?
Watch.
Yeah.
Watch up from underneath.
That would be quite good. Yeah.
And they should leave the sharks in there as well. Yeah. They make it doubly interesting.
That'd be far more interesting. That would be far... I'd like that. I'd like that. Yeah. Because I've learned to scuba dive in the last 4 years. So I all of my spare time now we go scuba diving.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. I love it. Love it.
It's not. None of these adventure things appeal to me at all. What do you like about it?
I like feeling completely and utterly insignificant. It's a real joy, but I like it because it's peaceful and it's nobody can talk to you, but people can still irritate you though. I was diving a couple of weeks ago. We went to Lanzarote diving, which is it's nice. Yeah. I thought it'd be quite Brits abroad, but it wasn't. It was nice. And, you know, it's quite an expensive hobby to have. You've got to buy a bit of stuff and you've got to fly out places and all that sort of stuff. I do it because it relaxes me, but there was this French bloke on our dive. He was a right arsehole. And he kept sort of swimming in front of me and sort of cutting me off at various things. I'd be looking at something and then his fin would come into my face. And it was a real moment of sort of 30 metres down going, Christ, how far away from people do you actually have to get? I mean, I've gone to a lot of trouble here. I'm wearing a very constricting wetsuit, a very heavy tank, 6 kilograms of weight. I've done 2 lots of courses. I've flown around the world to have a bit of peace. And now there's some French arsehole right in front of me, finning me in the face. I mean, how far away do I have to go? It's space, I think, is the next thing. Yeah. Yeah.
And so you've just finished your tour. You're not going to do Edinburgh this year?
No. I do one on, one off.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah, because I can't write a good enough hour. And your level of work and your productivity just blows my mind. Because I'm like, oh, an hour every couple of years, that'll do it, that'll be all right. And I think if you're going to Edinburgh, you really need to like your show and you really need to like the words that you're saying. And it just takes me too long to write an hour that I'm happy to do for that full month. Because there's nothing worse than going up there, finding yourself there for 27 nights in a row or whatever, and on the first night going, oh, this is shit, isn't it? How many more of these have we got to do? So I like to go knowing I've got a show that I'm going to enjoy doing for the month. Because then if you enjoy it, the audience enjoy it much more. They can see you enjoying it. Yeah.
So what are you going to do? Are you going to be working on a new show?
I've got to drink 6-pack of beer on the beach.
Yeah.
I live in Brighton. Why not? If it's a sunny August, I'll be there. It'll be 4-pack on the beach. I really should be doing some work. But I've got some gigs booked in. I've got some bits and bobs doing, but I'm going to enjoy summer.
Yeah, I mean, I did. I mean, it's aside from I was mentioning backstage, one of the summers that I took off, I did do all 12 shows here instead of.
That's
doing
really
Edinburgh,
not.
Which wasn't really. But even though it was only on Fridays and Saturdays, so although I had to learn them in the week and write a new show for the end, it was kind of nice
that's
not having.
Quite full
it was quite.
That
it was,
is quite full on.
It was more work than going to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Last year, oh, I went to bloody Indiana. That was that's the same as going to Alaska.
I went to
Indiana to see my wife's dying uncle.
Right.
Well, we didn't know he was dying, but then he died.
Oh. While you were there?
Yeah. We knew he was going to die, but we thought we had
we all know we're going to die.
We thought we had a bit more time.
Yeah.
It wasn't funny.
Yeah.
I talked about it a bit last week. It was like one of those things. It was one of those things where there was so much in it.
Yes.
But it's kind of my in-laws, and I think if I talk about it too much, I'll upset a lot of people.
Yes.
So one day I'll get to write about this. A very strange experience I had in Warsaw, Indiana.
Warsaw,
yeah, like Warsaw in Poland,
oh,
but in
right.
Indiana.
Yeah.
And it's right in the heart of Trump
territory.
Basically, it's, you know, we went to lunch with one of my wife's auntie's friends who had 5-6 Trump banners in the front of her garden.
It's amazing.
We're saying, it's all because of Benghazi. That's why I'm voting for Trump.
That's for Benghazi.
Because, because of the... what it was, wasn't it? Where Clinton, with the
diplomat
got killed. And so they all blamed Clinton for that. But as with all these things, they were all just looking for the reason to say I'm voting.
Yeah.
It's like Brexit. We're all the reason people were able to say is because of the NHS bus.
Yeah.
That's the reason we're voting. That wasn't true. Oh,
well, it's. I mean, I.
Oh, well, I thought that was the reason you voted. Yeah, doesn't matter though. Doesn't
matter though. I met a bloke in a bar in Alaska, and it was his bar, and we got talking, and he said, "So where are you guys from?" You know, and I said, "Well, we live in the UK," and he went, "Brexit!" Awesome! And I was like, wow, how is this even affecting you? I was really fascinated by, and I said, why? They really hate Merkel over there. They really hate Germany. They really hate Merkel. This is really interesting. But I had to explain to him that, we were all different nationalities around the table, and that, my Irish dad, my Irish stroke American brother, my Dutch friend. Yes.
No, it's all. And I thought, well, as it occurs to me, which is coming out soon, and maybe out by the time the first episode might be out by the time we this one airs. But I talked about that. There's in Warsaw they had on the school field, like there was a school, and it was the holiday time.
Yeah.
But they'd erected like loads of little white crosses on the school field.
Yeah.
And each of those crosses represented 4 abortions that had happened in Warsaw in the county that Warsaw was in.
Wow.
Since like 1978 or something. The remarkable thing I thought was not that many crosses and if you really care about abortions, why make every cross 4? Make every cross 1.
Every fetus is an individual, surely.
It's like, I want to represent. Oh, God, that's a lot of work.
That's a lot of whittling.
I mean, but then, you sort of think you're driving your kids past their school, going, why is the field full of cross? Oh, they're for aborted fetuses.
So it's in a school field?
It's in a school playing ground in the field.
If that had happened over here, parents were going, if that hadn't happened, your classroom size would be even bigger. Count your lucky stars.
So, it was an experience. It wasn't somewhere you would choose to go on holiday. I think Alaska's probably not somewhere. Maybe you would choose to go
Alaska. Well, I mean, the landscape's beautiful.
Yeah,
the landscape is really stunning. It is really, really stunning.
I saw Amish people and stuff like that. That was quite good. So, we went for a day to the Amish country and went round an Amish museum, heritage site.
Yeah.
Don't like buttons, the Amish.
They like what?
Don't like buttons or beards.
They don't like buttons.
Buttons or beards.
They've got beards.
But it's because, it was that part of the beard, the moustache bit.
Oh, why don't they have, with the free floating?
Because it's because the German people that sent them all, there was a big hoo-ha in Germany. And they didn't like what they were going on about. Their version of Christianity was slightly different. And, you know, if Jesus said anything, it was make sure you fight anyone who doesn't exactly agree with you, broadly agrees with you, but doesn't exactly agree with you. Make sure you... And I think those German guys had big moustaches and big buttons. And so they just, the guys who kind of, I think this is right, correct me if there are any, the problem is no Amish people are going to be listening, are they? That's the problem. So if you're an Amish person listening, please write in with a quill pen on a parchment and
you're
put it on a pigeon.
You're not going to be doing a reflectory on this subject anytime soon.
I quite like them. They sort of have little tricks to get around it. So
if they haven't got buttons, and I presume they don't have zips.
Yeah, no, no zips.
Well, how do they... do up their pants?
There was one kind of, I think there was one sort of fastening they were allowed. There was a lot of pins.
Oh, okay.
I think they were allowed to have buttons somewhere. But it was because of the persecution. But there was also this thing where some of them have businesses and they need websites and phones to run their businesses. So they're allowed to use a phone, but only if it's sort of an inconvenient distance away from where they're. So they're kind of adapting a little bit.
Yeah, they're going to have to let it go.
I need a phone. I need to go on the internet. All right, well, as long as you use that phone that's over there, that's okay.
One of those ones that's still attached to the wall.
Yeah.
Oh, this is inconvenient.
But it's quite... There's a lot of good things about it, and the way the Amish community works is if, like, someone has a misfortune, the rest of the community come round and help them.
Yeah.
So they don't believe in insurance because they couldn't. I think it's gambling, but whatever, it's not allowed.
Okay.
So if someone's barn burns down, then everyone else just comes and gives them stuff, which, you know, it's quite apt just at the moment as well. But, you know, that the way the community just comes together. So if something, they don't need insurance because they'll just help each other. If someone's ill or if someone needs to be sent to college or whatever,
they'll all club
together to make that happen. Yeah. And it's a community. So there was lots of really brilliant things about it, but, you know, someone have
Does
a moustache
really
if they want
it. Does it really work? Because I bet you still get the odd arsehole. Doesn't matter what system you put in place. Isn't it like that? Oh, I can't be asked to work. I just wait for somebody to bring me some jam, fudge, maybe a Kit Kat. Yeah, no, it is interesting.
Yeah, so you know, it's kind of weird. It's sort of interesting going to a place on holiday that you would never choose to go on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you sort of see, but that you sort of saw the real America as well as this, and then within this America, this kind of weird, like throwback to something else that still exists within America. So that's sort, you know, and America is such a melting pot.
Yeah,
and so many different things. So for some, that it's very, you know, you've got to admire their grit to stay. Yeah, say, we're not going to integrate.
No, actually, horse and cart still, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was interesting, but then, you know, someone died, didn't I, to cope with that. So it was a man I didn't know died, and I saw his dead body.
Oh. Okay.
One day I'll do a funny play about it one day. don't you worry, it's going to be fun. Hey, look, we're going to have to stop talking to me. It's been very lovely talking to you.
There
was loads I was going to talk to you about we didn't get around to. So you maybe have to. When you won the Nivea Funny Woman competition, did you get free Nivea?
Yeah. I had the best skin for about 6 months. It was very moist for about 6 months. A couple of tubs of that. I wish it had been sponsored by Absolute, but there you go.
Right, I'm going to take a random... Should I do a random one, or should I ask... I'll ask you one from the back of here. I think there might be a couple of good ones in the back of here. Let's have a look. We'll see. Hey, this is guy. I just tweeted this today, but this isn't going to be funny. This is kind of interesting. I was looking at the Voyager space probe, you know, and there was a thing on Twitter showing there's 116 images of the planet Earth and things on the planet Earth that Carl Sagan and the people at NASA decided to send out on this gold disc into space.
Right.
So that if aliens find it, that will represent what the human beings are and what
disc.
Human life. Yeah, on a kind of gold disc that they could play music and show pictures.
Right.
Anyone know? It must have been 1970s, was it?
Oh, 77. Yes.
Because it comes back in Star Trek, doesn't it? And it tries to destroy the world. So watch out for that. what one photo would you send out to aliens? It's a difficult last question. I'll do one about bumming at the end. Sorry, no, I'm saving bumming for next week.
What photo
would you think would sum up... It's quite a difficult thing. No, they had to send out 116 photos, or they only had a certain amount on there. Is there a thing you would like to send now?
At the moment, I think it would probably be a photo of Trump, which sounds quite... But just to go, it came to this. It came to... It finally, we screwed it up so badly and created a system so off its head that it came to this. It ended with this. Because I think it might well end with this. You know, it's because if there is a nuclear war... cockroaches and his hair are the only two things that will now survive.
Yeah.
That will totally take a blast.
Maybe a picture of a cockroach in Donald Trump's
hair. Yeah. This is what the human race was reduced to. I'm a totally awesome cockroach. Oh my God, I'm the most amazing cockroach in the world. I'm the most amazing cockroach. I mean, when I was watching him last week, 2 weeks ago when he was in Saudi Arabia,
yeah.
And I was just watching, I went, what am I looking at here? And I thought, I'm looking at a bloke who... used to be a reality TV star and is now the President of the United States, who a few months ago wanted to ban Muslims from entering the USA. He's now in Saudi Arabia talking about extremism to a regime that beheads protesters and flogs homosexuals. I mean, you could not make this shit up. This is why fake news is so much more appealing than reality these days. It's gone completely tits up, so that's... I think that's probably... It's not a joyful... I'd send that and maybe a picture of a hammerhead shark, because I like that as well. I'd go, which of these two is more dangerous? Yeah.
It could have been you. You could have been the reality TV star could that was president
mate.
Of Earth.
I'd have gone proper Kim Jong-un. I'd have gone really... I'd have started out all nicey-nicey and then gone, do you know what? Fuck it. I'll be carried around on the gold throne. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you'd be tempting to be, you know... I mean, he's already got that propensity anyway before he was the
totally.
President.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So.
Well, it's been lovely to talk to you. You must come back again because there's so many things to talk to you about. But ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause, Zoe Lyons! I've been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast with me, returning, and my guest, Zoe Lyons. The music is, as always, by Pest. Thanks very much to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, everyone at Go Faster Stripe. Thank you to my producer, Ben Walker. He's back. This is Go Faster Stripe, Fuzz and Sky Potato Production. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this show and want to help us make more, please go to GoFasterStripe.com. You can either become a monthly badger... Give us £1 a month, you'll get access to backstage interviews, all sorts of fun. Also get a badge and also get emails telling you who's coming up way before everyone else gets to find out. All sorts of benefits. Or you can just go and buy an emergency questions book or some Leon Edlaw postcards and badges. All of that money we ploughed straight back into making more podcasts for you. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.